Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Greenwich, Connecticut. Welcome to the show, Ben Spiegel.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, great to have you here. Now, you have a, I'll say, kind of a quasi-Wall Street background. You've got a lot of experience with private equity and the world of finance, and you've zeroed in on a very specific segment, which I'm excited to talk about because it's not a typical segment. But before we do, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah, of course. So I started off in investment banking at Barclays Capital, working in capital markets. I was there for a couple of years. Then I moved over to the buy side, where I worked as a generalist, focusing on special situations in the lower middle market, illiquid securities, leveraged loans, high yield bonds, post New York private equity, really a deep value focus, bottoms up approach, cash flow based, as opposed to more of a macro look or base of analysis. And that's something I really took to me to this day. And how I really got my start in real estate is I started doing fairly well from a young age. And I one of the more, I guess, smarter decisions I made was I made a rule that every year when I would get my bonus, I would take 50% of that no matter what and buy a small building. And over the preceding 5-6 years, I accumulated a few buildings. When I was given the opportunity to buy a non-performing loan cross-collateralized by a large portfolio in northern Manhattan, it was at that point where the entrepreneurial spirit in me said, maybe you should leave the buy side and do this full time. I ended up doing that, took it through the non-performing loan through bankruptcy, and restructured the buildings and sold them for a large profit. And that's when I established Redwood Capital Advisors, where we focus primarily on real estate, special situations in the lower middle market, $10 to $30 million space.
Very cool. This portfolio in Upper Manhattan, I mean, that, are we talking Harlem? Are we talking Upper West Side? Tell me a bit about the portfolio.
So Upper Manhattan, I meant, it was Mount Vernon and Yonkers. So the border So that's where I bought my first couple, 5 or 8 buildings. And that Signature Bank, which I'm sure you know, no longer exists anymore. They were the ones that helped the loan. And they called me because that's where all my 7 or 8 other buildings were. And it was really a reach to get me to even think about buying this loan, considering I had to go for note-on-note financing and then raise a tremendous amount of equity on top of it in my mid-20s, but or late-20s. But I thought that it was the best thing for me. And I did something called, I implemented Section 8 arbitrage after a long court case taking me through bankruptcy. And I would basically negotiate the tenants leaving, renovate the apartments. And I specifically bought the portfolio because I knew that the Section 8 government rents were at a 30 to 40% discount to the in-place cash rents. So I knew that there was tremendous upside as long as I could turn over the units and renovate them to the standards that Section 8 would approve of. And after a short 2 years, Cash Connect was able to do, during that time, was able to do a cash out refinance and then was able to sell. And basically, it's kind of parallel with my strategy that I am more asset agnostic in that I don't just focus on whether it's multifamily, medical office, mixed use, or mobile home parks. I really try to go into the weeds and dive for unique one-time special situations where there is some kind of outlier or specific reason that I am being offered something at a tremendous discount, and I have an unfair competitive advantage to bring it up to market value and monetize it.
So that's not a rookie maneuver, what you did. I mean, that is a fairly sophisticated approach for someone coming into the business. I know it wasn't your absolute first deal, but even so, that's definitely not a rookie move. Was it your background in debt and debt structuring that gave you the confidence you could approach it?
Yes. Yeah, so I had a colleague, a mentor that was a little bit older than me that He owned a bunch of rent stabilized buildings in Manhattan, and we would always have conversations about his strategy and how he implemented it. Obviously, this was before the HDPSA laws were put into place in 2019 that rendered this strategy useless in New York. But I was always fond of the arbitrage strategy and how you didn't have to be a QIB or a qualified institutional buyer, which basically means you manage in excess of $100 million to do it, like you do in the leveraged loan and high yield and post-real private equity world. So I was always fond that you didn't have to have proof of such tremendous liquidity to be able. You could be a solo operator, get you an individual, and go out and do it on your own. So I really took his playbook and the playbook of many other great people before me and implemented. Listen, it was not easy. I went from Park Avenue, the high floor as an analyst, looking at Bloomberg terminals to Mount Vernon and Yonkers, knocking on doors of some tenants of questionable quality. And so I really had to roll up my sleeves, and it was not as gracious and as easy as I make it sound. It was difficult. It was very difficult. It's a different world, it was very exciting at the time, and I love working for myself as an entrepreneur. And it's really that kind of looking for the asymmetric return profile which led me to find the luxury RV resort asset class that I now believe is one of the greatest real estate opportunities in our lifetime. Back in 2019, like I mentioned, when the ETPA laws were passed and rent stabilization, you're no longer allowed to implement the value add strategy, that really hurt or caused me to have to look for a new strategy in a sense. I moved the vast, I live in Greenwich, so I moved, the, I sold my portfolio in New York, and now I own large apartment buildings in Bridgeport and Fairfield County. The vast majority of my traditional real estate holdings are now in Connecticut, where I've done ample analysis that leads me to believe that's what's going on in New York will not be repeated here. About 2 years ago, I was in a contract on 100 acres of land in Mexico Beach, Florida, and I was about 3 days from going hard on my deposit for 10 million. It was a $10 million purchase. I was being offered 8 million note-on-note seller financing. And about a few days before I was going hard on my deposit, I was told to talk to this consultant in Mobile, Alabama. And basically, he just turned upside down 6 months of due diligence in 5 minutes.
Fascinating. So, and that sometimes happens, right? So what happened with that particular property? Now you've pivoted into luxury RV. Did you ultimately turn that property into a luxury RV site, or did you end up canceling that project?
Well, I canceled it because he went into a myriad of aspects that made me realize I had no idea what I was doing in terms of endangered species, wetlands, Army Corps of Engineers. And I quickly learned that this was not even remotely similar to mobile home park investing, that this
Right.
was a it's a it's an outdoor hospitality business.
Exactly.
And that if I was 2 days later, I was on a plane down to Mobile to meet with him in person. I was so impressed. And I've done a lot of consulting calls back in my day. So, basically, I learned that you need to really partner or at least be getting the advice of someone that has a quantifiable track record of executing in the outdoor hospitality industry before getting involved.
Absolutely. So what it is about that particular segment that you find attractive? I mean, we ourselves are currently in due diligence on a project right now, specifically in that asset class, also in Florida. But what is it about that particular asset class? What is the opportunity that you're seeing?
Absolutely. So not many people are aware of this, but the average age of an RV owner in the United States is down to 32 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the like for 2022 and 2020, for example, the amount of RV there was 650,000 RV shipped, but only 15,000 new pads built. So that's less than 3% of the new demand that's coming to the market. When you accompany that with the average age of the existing RV destination being 45 years old and 95% being single-owned mom-and-pop operated, they don't have the necessary CapEx or resources to upgrade their existing destinations that this new millennial demographic of RV owner is demanding in their quality or in the places that they want to visit. And obviously, when you throw COVID into the mix, that's really what just accelerated everything to the way that it is now. This whole it's, it was wasn't a cyclical change, but it's a structural shift in the way society views experiences and the way that millennials no longer believe that owning a house is the ultimate goal and the ultimate attainable status of what they want in their lives.
Now, in this particular segment, I think it's difficult to make sense out of recent history in the sense that during the pandemic, there was a shortage of RVs and manufacturers cranked up their volume to astronomical levels. Where today, I don't have exact statistics for you, but I would venture to guess that there's years of inventory on dealer lots right now. So the market is in some ways oversupplied. How do you even make sense out of how do you project forward based on the last couple of years of history where you've got such a strong bullwhip effect happening?
Yeah, so basically, you did see a big decline in actual sales of RVs from 21 to 22 and even 22 to 23. However, when we do an analysis before we even think about building a destination, we basically we draw a circle, a 30-mile, 40-mile circle around where our prospective construction site is. And we analyze every competing RV destination in that space, whether it's, I guess, Class A or Class D, it doesn't matter what the quality is. And our sniff test is we won't build unless every single RV destination in that space has a LTM occupancy rate of at least 70%.
Well, Ben, are there particular areas of the country that you're focusing right now that you see as real opportunities where there is that supply-demand imbalance?
Yeah, so I've spent a lot of time down there, a lot of consultants, and what I have found is that Florida and Texas are oversaturated right now, especially post-COVID. There's been a humongous boom in building. I'm not saying there's not great opportunities that exist in Florida and Texas. There is. But I have specifically honed in on the Gulf Coast of Alabama and Mississippi primarily, because I feel that as long as you go along I-10 from Florida to Texas, but I find that the growth is moving or east and west kind of from both directions, and it's going to really emerge on Mississippi and Alabama primarily, in Harrison County, Mississippi, and Mobile and Baldwin County, Alabama.
Fascinating. And that makes sense because I-10 stretches all the way from Florida to all the way to Los Angeles. And if you are traveling across the country, you need places to stay along that route. And I-10 is the preferred east-west route along the Gulf Coast. And definitely, if there's a big gap, you don't want to necessarily do a flyover or drive through over such a large distance if you're traveling with a family. So that makes a lot of sense. Well, Ben, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me at redwoodcapitaladvisors.com, Instagram at Redwood Capital ADV. And just to kind of leave folks off with something, one of the more interesting parts of the RV construct. I don't buy the reason why I don't buy existing and I only choose to build new is my all-in economics, including the luxury pool, the co-working spaces, the pickleball courts, all in amortize them at $50,000 a pad immediately upon completion. Or even sometimes before I put a shovel in the ground, if it's the right market, I could sell between 100 and 130,000 a pad. And the US Department of Agriculture can give me 80% loan to construction cost financing, construction to permanent over a 25-year amortizing basis once I finish. So though you put those two things together and they really make the story a little bit more compelling.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Ben, I love the story, love what you're doing. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Ben Spiegel at redwoodcapitaladvisors.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.